This is Christopher Bjerknes. I'm the author of The Manufacture and Sale of St. Einstein. I have with me my friend Jim, who is a former Christian Zionist. He comes from a strong Christian background. His father was a fundamentalist Christian, and I was wondering if he would share with us some of his experiences, both as a Christian Zionist and what led him to change his views on the issue of the State of Israel and the relationship between the State of Israel and the United States of America.
My father, he was definitely into Bible prophecy. I think I could even call it Cold War Bible prophecy almost, because it was always looked at from that point of view. I don't know if anybody would recognize the name Dr. Robert Taylor.
Yeah.
And you know, that was a, I don't know, it was a show on, I don't know, some alternate channel at the time, maybe like 20 or, you know, not a major network, but he would watch that quite frequently. And essentially it was the point of view of the conflict between East and West.
And that was a conflict between good and evil?
Are you relating that
to actual biblical prophecies where the conflicts matched events which are spelled out in the prophecies of Isaiah and Ezekiel and Revelation?
Yeah, if you look at the belief was that Gog and Magog were, and of course I think Meshach and Tubal, that they were, those were actually grandsons, I think they were grandsons of Noah that settled in what is modern-day Russia, or then the Soviet Union. And it also pitted many Arab states as also attacking Israel. As a matter of fact, there's the, talking about, I will put hooks in your jaws and turn the king of the north upon the mountain of Israel.
Are you referring to a television show?
Yeah, it was. There was actually a TV show called Bible Prophecy by Dr. Robert Taylor.
What year are you referring to?
This was probably maybe in the 70s and 80s.
So it's not there any longer then?
No, he's long gone.
So
a real, I would say, a patriarch of that movement would be Hal Lindsey.
So this was like what people might have referred to as a television evangelist? It was one of those type of shows?
No. I mean, he was pretty much almost like a, just like a newsman. Just very Spartan. You know, he definitely was not,
he
didn't have that selling approach.
Or it wasn't like about lectures and raising money for a particular church or something then?
I think he would sell some of his materials, but it certainly wasn't that flashy. You know, it was. I think it had an element of sincerity. Even today, I would say that it was sincere.
And this is what your father would listen to, or you yourself? This is what you grew up with?
Yeah, I grew up with it. Sure.
So he had an effect on you. Is that?
Yes, no question.
And what sort of beliefs would you say you picked up from him, if you were to summarize it?
I would say much of it comes from that you would not want to oppose the seed of Abraham. If you do, you will essentially be subject to a curse.
If you bless Abraham,
you will be blessed.
And then how did this relate to, like, politics in the world that you actually lived in? What was his message as far as what you should actually do or not do in your life?
It would definitely mean that politically speaking, you would be anti-Arab and pro-Israel.
So that was one of his main messages then, you would say, or at least one of the things you picked up from him.
I would say that, yes. Sure. I was definitely pro-Israel because of that.
And anti-Arab, not just pro-Israel. Actually anti-Arab, actually. See, there's a difference between being pro-Israel and at the same time considering Arabs to be human. Would you say you were actually beyond that? You were looking at the Arabs as some sort of inferior species that needs
I wouldn't say it would be inferior. I would say that they were just subject to God's judgment.
Because I've seen some Christians that believe they need to get rid of these Arabs because it's Jesus' birthplace and they've got to drive them out and this is what God wants. You weren't in that group? It wasn't that extreme?
I think it was more of a passive approach, you know, where it was kind of like passively being for it. And, you know, one important thing that reinforced it, you know, the Shah of Iran at the, you know, in the 70s was pro-Western. And Persia was actually along with it in the Gog and Magog prophecy that they would turn on Israel. And at the time, you know, they were pro-Western, and all of a sudden you have the, you know, the Islamic uprising and the Shah, which then becomes an enemy of Israel. And that led into the prophecy and, of course, the concept that they are more or less an enemy of the seed of Abraham at that point.
No, you're not talking about Arabs now. You're talking about Persians.
Yeah, even in this case, yes, Persians. Pretty much if you are a power that is against the state of Israel, you are not on the side of good.
Now, how did you frame Judaism and Islam in relationship to Christianity? Or did it ever occur to you? Was it more of a political thing at that time than religious?
I mean, how would I view those two juxtaposed to Christianity?
Yes.
I would say that, you know, the prophecies refer to, if you look in Zechariah, it talks about Jews or Israelites, Hebrews at the time, recognizing their Savior as being Jesus, as in they look upon whom they have pierced. So, therefore, they're specifically mentioned as being potential converts. Whereas, I would say that Islam is not, you know, isn't necessarily viewed in that way. Although I would say I'm sure there are some Christians, especially do identify somewhat with Islam. But I don't think at the time that Islam was specifically pointed out because, you know, the Russians were the bad ones, too, as bad as anybody.
And did you welcome the idea that these events seem to be fulfilling prophecy and that it would herald the arrival of the second coming of Christ?
Yeah, I think that was the general idea, yeah.
So it was the idea of war was associated with a form of rejoicing.
Yeah, I think it turns on its head the idea of comforting in a time of trouble, which I think is the intent. That it should be, I mean, as I believe now, that, you know, that you know, to hope for mayhem is more or less an apostate view. But yes, I think there is a good deal of that element, yes.
Did you find people in your churches or that you met that were actually trying to encourage this chaos in order to help quicken the pace of this?
I would say that would be a fringe element. I don't think that they were.
Most were just passively watching and hoping. Like
yeah,
they're watching a movie
yeah.
on television.
Yeah, I think that was much more. I mean, certainly my father, and he never instilled in me that, you know, wouldn't it be great if one of us could, you know, start the apocalypse? That's not it at all. No, which is, you know, encouraging. It's not as bad as all that, but it's certainly fatalistic.
About as far as attempts to intervene to prevent it.
Yeah, see, I don't think, I think it's more, again, like a fatalistic attitude where it is not preventable. Maybe, you know, even now, I would say maybe it's not preventable, but that's not the point. The role that we play is to fight evil.
But the problem is you would never know which event, let's assume it's really coming, you would never know which event is part of it in which event you're supposed to stop. Like if your house catches on fire, are you supposed to just sit there and say, well, it's coming, this is supposed to happen, fire starts? Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. No.
From the point of view of a real Christian, he will not know which war is part of this apocalypse and which one he should be trying to stop.
Well, so, that's why I think that kind of attitude where, you know, that kind of fatalism is, that's God's role. It's not, I believe it's not. I mean, if you actually look at the scriptures, I think correctly, like, you know, I feel I do today, the role that you play is to do good. And, for instance, a good example is in the story of Exodus, God hardens Pharaoh's heart. And, you know, so Pharaoh is a tool of God. But it's not to be a tool of God's judgment is not, that's not where you want to be. That's not the role for a Christian. That's the last place that you want to be. You do not want to be a tool for God's judgment. That is not Christian.
So is that your main change over these past few years, or would you say there's other things too in your attitudes?
Well, I think what happened is with the breakup with the Soviet Union, and that Hal Lindsey version just didn't fit. Nothing seemed to fit anymore, and so I more or less, I think, drifted away from prophecy as being somewhat confused, and more or less didn't really pursue it that much anymore, because it seemed to wander further and further from that paradigm.
I seem to remember in that era, many Americans, myself included, had a very romantic notion about Israel, that they were this tiny commando nation who were very tough and very efficient militarily, and that they were able to wipe the floor with the Arabs whenever there was a war, and that they were our staunch ally who would stand behind us come hell or high water, and that we needed them. And I think some of that has faded also with the passing of the Soviet Union and the greater awareness of the atrocities that they're committing against the Palestinians. Are you aware of those things, and how did that affect your view of the state of Israel in the context of Jacob, the people of the Jews?
Could you repeat the question kind of concisely?
Did you used to have kind of a romantic conception of Israel as a tough, independent military nation?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was that anyway. Yeah, I think there is. Yeah, it kind of a miraculous kind of thing that how is it that this small minority seems to prevail? Therefore, God is involved, et cetera,
sure. And do you think they deliberately portrayed that image so that it would key into the biblical epic image of the Jewish people as always being a struggling tribe, always outnumbered, and yet somehow, seemingly through God's intervention, they persevere?
Yeah, oh sure, yeah. I mean, it's definitely considered that it is God's intervention that allows them to exist, yeah.
And how do you look upon that today? Or does it even occur to you?
See, I think it's certainly possible that there's a role that it might end up in such a way. You know, there's a lot of, you know, things in the Bible, of course, that talk about, you know, things aren't always going to work out for the best, and it has a purpose. But my view is even under those circumstances, the role to play for the individual Christian, and who knows, you know, maybe we're all wrong. Maybe it is 1,000 years from now. Maybe it is 5,000 years from now. So you cannot anticipate evil. You have to do good. You don't anticipate evil. You do good now. And that the scripture is full of that. When I look at like Pat Robertson, you know, he called for the assassination of Chavez, and I can anyone imagine Christ being on the Sermon on the Mount and, you know, talking about the Beatitudes when you assassinate world leaders, you know, you will, it's an absurdity. It says to be as wise as serpents and gentle as doves.
Are you aware of some of the rabbis and other Jews who are complaining that Israel should not be formed through military action and murder and all this? Are you aware of this, that they have these groups and that they're routinely demonstrating? And how did that affect you?
Actually, Chris pointed it out to me, which, really this is my view now has been where I would say I was in a state of confusion where now I think I've come to, you know, a state of more understanding of it. What I believe is that there is, in fact, God does promise a place for Israel. But it's if you read, let's say, Romans 11, for instance, it talks about how God still has a plan for Israel. But what he mentioned specifically is there's a remnant of that he will save that has not bowed down the knee to Baal. So I believe that, yes, those are righteous Jews that are essentially have not recognized their Messiah. So,
but you were not aware of them until just very recently, huh?
Yeah, I was not aware of them. And I view them as the... As that Israel, that the real Israel that Christians should look to as the true Israel. What I believe the state of Israel is now is a copy of that. It's a fraud. If you look at history, you realize that they're Satanists. So. I can't support a Satanist state. I believe it's a complete fraud. As in Revelation, chapter 2, it talks about people who call themselves Jews. And this is Christ saying that there are people who say that they are Jews, but they are really a synagogue of Satan.
Are you aware of some of the events that they've done in order to help Israel get established, such as the bombing of the King David Hotel, for example? Is that a new event to you, or have you heard about that?
Oh, well, yeah. No, I've heard about that, yeah. I thought you were referring to the ones that are against the state of Zion.
No, the ones that the attacks that they have set up themselves in order to help develop their own nation.
Eric's not referring to... He was initially referring to anti-Zionist Jews, and now he's referring to...
I'm aware of the... Yes, I have... Ever since this has been pointed out to me, I generally discounted conspiracy theories as lacking organization because there wasn't enough concentration of power. But once I understood that, then I researched everything very heavily, and I'm... very well aware of the false flag phenomenon. I mean, for instance, Christians should know this because Nero burned Rome and blamed it on the Christians. So if anybody should know about this, then it should be Christians.
And is this something else that's new to you, or have you known this for decades? Have you been aware of this issue, I mean?
Have I been aware of which issue?
Oh, like the false flags like you're talking about. Have you been aware of Israel using those?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Oh, so this is not new.
I have learned an enormous amount in the last few weeks, yes.
Oh, the last few weeks. But not, I mean, like years ago when you were growing up, you were not really aware of these.
Oh, no, not at all. No.
Oh. And what about issues like the 9/11 attack? Have you heard much about that? Or have you looked into that one yet?
Oh, yes.
And have you noticed any possible Israeli involvement yet?
Oh, yes, the five dancing Israelis, yes.
Well, that's just one of them, but there's actually a whole lot more. those are just some of them that get caught. But
right. I'm sure, as a matter of fact, I think that at this point, almost the vast majority of terrorism is a false flag. That's my belief now.
Oh, so you've had quite a transformation then.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. Well, like I said, as soon as I understood, you know, the order of things, it was very easy to reorient myself. I mean, once I understood, I mean, when you understand the House of Rothschild, how they acquired their wealth, you know that they've acquired an enormous amount of wealth. You know that they are ruthless, and you know that the things that they were saying just before they began to buy up the media so that they could go underground. It's almost child's play to see it. Things are plain in plain sight to me now.
Well, the biggest problem we all have trying to get information out is to convince people of this. What would you say would be a good way, from your point of view, to convince other people of all of this information? What affected you? Like you said, that the Rothschilds information. Where did you get that? Did you get something before that that helped you going, or get you going, or did?
I would say what got me going was the Federal Reserve. When you see that the Federal Reserve is a lie, and this is an institution that, you know, you see every day, and you know, as soon as I understand how it was formed. I'm in the field of computers, and I always complain that complex security is not security at all. So in other words, complexity it allows things to hide. And why is the Federal Reserve so complex? What's it hiding? And I smelled a rat, and I began to dig. And, you know, why would it be that way?
You mean the complexity alone is what caused you to wonder about it? Not you hadn't yet seen things like the Money Masters video or the...
I don't know if it was the Money Masters.
Or the Griffin, there's a G. Edward Griffin book about the Jekyll Island.
Yeah, I think when I saw the Money Masters video, and then I began to look at other accounts that explain the Federal Reserve.
So you say this... Understanding the Federal Reserve is what really cracked the egg for you.
Oh, yes. Oh, you know, that's absolutely right. Dead on.
Well, that's interesting. So once you saw that was a lie, you started looking at who's in it? Or did you just start wondering what else is a lie? How did you go from there to other things?
Well, for whatever reason, I think I understand how much money that they really have. I've also been interested in economics, and really money just represents human behavior. When I give somebody a $20 bill, I get $20 worth of behavior. And so you can manipulate human behavior with that kind of wealth. And when you consider, you know, when you say... Chris has even said, well, you know, it's half the world's wealth, but in terms of disposable income, it's infinitely more than we have, because most of whatever wealth we have is a subsistence level.
Right, and they have way beyond that.
Right.
And so, you're right. See, the problem is that they can buy an awful lot of people with that money.
Yes.
There are very few that will tell them, take your money and go.
Right. Absolutely. And that's why, I'm not naive to that. I think some people are. I'm not. I understand it. I got it right away.
Have you ever noticed, it's an interesting thing to think about, but if people just would tell them, no, we don't want your money, it would be the end. And it wouldn't be a shot fired.
Yeah, isn't it interesting, what I find interesting, again, is, you know, what does Christianity say? Be gentle. So don't go to war. Why are we going to war? Don't engage in usury. You know, why do we put ourselves into debt? It tells Christians not to do what we're doing.
But then we have to wonder, is it Christians telling them to do these things in the first place? Who is promoting this? See, that's when you start wondering, who's promoting all these wars? Who's promoting all of the debt and the usury?
Who reaps the benefit?
Right.
Yeah, I corrected someone when they said no one wins in a war, and I corrected them. It's that's entirely untrue. It's the bankers. And, you know, that's the other thing I understood is that when I saw the Federal Reserve System, I understood that debt is profitable for them. And war creates debt. Therefore, even if there was no intent to have a system like that, it's just inevitable.
Now, do you think that there is a volatile mixture which is being brewed in the Middle East, which is precipitating a conflict between Christians and Islam in order to profit the perceived self-interest of the leaders of Israel? And what do you think would happen if the Christian Zionists, for one reason or another, say they didn't actually get whisked away in the rapture, came to the conclusion that these people had deceived them and that they were serving the beast and that they were being led into conducting evil acts on behalf of an evil force? It seems to me that they're playing an awfully dangerous game, and as much control as they have, they don't have control over everything, and human behavior is very unpredictable.
Or you're saying that...
What if a lot of Christians underwent the transition that you've undergone? How do you suspect that they will view Israel if we are led into broader war, which throws us also into debt, and the horrors of this war are brought home to us in one way or another, and Christians come to see that this is not serving God? To bring all this evil into the earth is not serving God.
I'm sorry, I'm having a little trouble hearing, but is your question how...
What if the Christian viewpoint changes from being Christian Zionist to being Christian
anti-Zionist?
Yes. What do you think the ramifications of that will be?
I believe that they would certainly become much more passive. In other words, going to war, it would certainly not be looked upon favorably. I'm not really sure what the reaction to that would be. But I think, for myself, that's what's happened to me. I realize that every act of violence against anything works in their favor almost entirely.
And how would you build bridges between the Christian community and the Muslim community and the Jewish community, so that these issues, instead of resulting in conflict, can result in productive works for humanity? Isn't that the Christian spirit?
Absolutely.
Would you also perceive that as the spirit of Islam and the spirit of Judaism?
Well, the only prohibition in Christianity that you should not associate yourself with are actually apostate Christians. That is the only people that you are not to have fellowship with. For instance, someone who is a false teacher that says, I am a Christian, and it's okay to kill this person, etc., etc., that Paul says that you should not even have them in the church. When it comes to anyone else, Christ led that example, and he was having a meal with tax collectors, etc., etc.
But wouldn't Pat Robertson fall into that category? So then there's millions, possibly, of Americans that don't even get that concept.
Yeah, I think false teachers are particularly... They are mentioned frequently in the New Testament. especially I think in John, I think in, you know, in the small letters, it mentions false teachers, and it's particularly harsh, specifically on false teachers. As far as average Christians being led astray, I don't think there's quite that condemnation. I think it's an element of self-serving leadership, which is the primary target of that admonition. So, yeah, I would say these apostate Christian televangelists, those would be the one particular group of people that would not be welcome to the Christian church.
Well, somehow we got to get, you know, this message throughout all of these churches.
Yeah,
you
see, I'm actually working on that.
Are you running into a lot of resistance yourself already?
I have been sending emails and information to many friends that I've had, that I have now in the past, and I plan on going to several churches that I've been to, and I intend to find people and warn them.
Yeah, because hopefully people will pick this up and spread it, because otherwise it goes nowhere. You're not seeing too much yet in the church themselves, the churches, as far as when they talk to the whole congregation at once? It's not. Are these still issues?
That is precisely the thing that I hope to engineer. I have a church in mind that is actually quite enormous, and that is going to be my.
That's one of your
obsession.
Goals. But you haven't seen it happen yet, then.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I have not. I haven't immersed myself enough.
Oh.
So, it's certainly something that I have already been considering.
How do you view it in terms of party politics? I know that the so-called moral majority always tried to align themselves with the televangelists to form a swing political bloc for the Republican Party, generally for the Republican Party.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Do you think that's an abuse of religion, or do you think that's a proper use of religion? And if it is a proper use of religion, how would you swing it the other way? Just by spreading the word, basically evangelizing about the truth?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that politics should be an after effect of one's faith. I've heard people describe separation of church and state. Church and state actually are problems because they are institutions. A church is not a person. A state is not a person. So they are fundamentally flawed as having political power because they are institutions. If you have a religion, you ought to vote based upon whatever moral principle you think applies. In my case, I think people would be, I would hope most people would be happy with my religious moral concept, you know, thou shalt not murder, steal. So, yeah, I would support laws. I would support that as an individual.
Do you think there will be an emergence in this country of a new political party as people become disaffected with the standard two-party system?
I'm beginning to wonder if that's the only. I think that may be the only way, because I think the other two parties are heavily corrupted. There's really essentially no difference.
And how will you judge them by their fruits? If it's a,
yeah, right.
I hate
exactly
to use that expression. But if it's a new party,
yeah, by their fruits you will know them. A bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree bears good fruit.
And would you be opposed to the idea of a straight out about Christian party? Do you
would
think
I
that
be
would
opposed
be a corrupting
to
influence? You know, in Europe they have like
yeah, no, I know that
union.
I do. I don't know. I don't have an opinion on that at this point. I think it would be. I think it would exclude. Again, I Christianity is not an isolationist religion. It is not a religion that is that intends to isolate. So it is inclusive, not in belief, you know.
But as far as people goes,
I'm sorry.
Well, you're meaning inclusive in far as welcoming all people. You know, that's one of the things you do see at a Christian church. It's everybody welcome.
Yes.
Rather than only certain people born a certain way or whatever.
What if the government? What if the government enacts laws which make it a hate crime to assert certain Christian beliefs? Would you think that the government then would have crossed the line, and that the only response would be to form a defensive Christian party?
There should not be any laws specifically protecting Christians.
Protecting or prescribing. There should be no laws that make it illegal for Christians to believe what they believe. Or to
there should not be a law making forcing people to believe.
Well, they're trying to make in other countries certain statements illegal. And for instance, it could eventually become illegal to quote certain passages in the Bible which have an anti-Jewish tinge to them, such as you said, the synagogue of Satan, or the passage, his blood be upon us, or things like that.
Well, I know how I feel about that. I would be absolutely against that. And I think that actually would, there would be a tremendous backlash if that were attempted. That is not likely to go past, I would say, that would have a unifying effect on pretty much every Christian in the country. You would find Protestants and Catholics being strongly opposed to that, I'm sure.
And how do you feel about the efforts in the media to degrade Christianity?
Well, I think it's engineered. It's more evidence, as far as I'm concerned, of a bias against Christianity.
And how would you explain the apparent dichotomy, on the one hand, appealing to Christians to aid Israel, and yet on the other hand, degrading Christianity? Do you think it's the same group doing it, or do you think it serves the same purpose ultimately?
Oh, I think it's fun. I think it has a common source.
And how do you think Christians ought to maintain the strong emphasis on Jesus when the emphasis seems to be shifting more towards God as a general concept and away from Jesus and the principles that Jesus taught in the Gospels?
Because
the God of the Old Testament was a God of wrath, and the principles of Jesus are loving kindness among mankind. And it seems to be that they are veering away from Jesus as a spiritual guide and more towards Old Testament prophecy as a rigid code, as a plan, as opposed to a conduct of behavior.
I'm not sure if that. I do feel that there is more of an affinity, trying to find common ground with Judaism, but I think for the most part in the circles I've been, except for maybe Catholicism. There's still a very heavy emphasis on Jesus. Jesus is still central. There are unambiguous lines where Jesus says that I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one gets to the Father except through me. So, does it go directly to God the Father? Is specifically, a pointless act in in Christianity in most of the Christian circles that I've been. I think they're well aware of that.
That you can only obtain salvation through Jesus, not by a simple belief in God.
Yes, that would be evangelical Christianity for sure. I would say probably there are many Christians out there who don't feel that way. But I'm not really sure where they would find that in the Gospels or anything else in the New Testament. So that's why there's that idea that one has to accept Christ for your sin. That's the importance of it, because Christians feel that you will be lost without a sacrifice. It's not a condemnation against anyone who's not Christian. It's not like you're evil or a Christian's trying to get rid of you. They're actually trying to save you. That's what's behind it. So it is. It's not a hostile act. It's an act of altruism. If one isn't a Christian believer, then you might not believe it. But it isn't an aggressive act. It's an attempt to save, albeit from one's point of view, it might be misguided.
Now, in your former life as a Christian Zionist, why was it so important that the Second Coming arrived in your lifetime? Was it simply that people wanted to view the spectacle of it, that they wanted to experience it, that they wanted to be that specific generation? Was it that it would reinforce their faith?
To be honest, I think it's as ordinary as, when you get up Monday morning, wouldn't it be nice not to have to get up Monday morning and go to work? I think there's a good deal of escapism.
So it's kind
of which is fine. I'd love to escape many of the things of this world too. But I think there's a lot of that. I think that's the why. Because it would be an exciting thing. It's an exciting concept.
If they were to try to stage it to make the Christian Zionist community believe that this was happening, how would they go about doing it? And how would the Christian Zionist community react if the Israelis were able to wipe out the Dome of the Rock and the Al-Aqsa Mosque and were to rebuild the temple and begin conducting sacrifices?
Oh, I think they would view that as an exciting fulfillment of Bible prophecy, I think.
You don't think that they would view that as a manifestation of the Antichrist?
Yeah, I would think it would be a mixed reaction, because I think from my point of view, the further along it gets, the more I would be, maybe I'd be hopeful, but at the same time, I would worry, well, I'm still here. Did I miss something? So maybe, I'm thinking, okay, from that point of view, how will I feel? Yeah, maybe I might be. I think there's going to be, I think it's going to be ambivalence.
Would it be because you just wouldn't feel convinced enough of it, enough by it? It would just seem a little too artificial?
I don't know if it would be artificial. I think that they were not considered worthy to be taken and have to suffer through the tribulation. And I think that might come up. I mean, if much of this is fulfilled and let's say things that might pertain to the tribulation were happening, I think Christians would begin to think that maybe they were left behind.
Oh.
So what if a world war were to break out? There was a nuclear strike against Iran. China got pulled into it. Israel got hit and hit hard, and after three-year struggle, things worked out that Israel came to dominate most of the lands from the Nile to the Euphrates. There was a massive emigration of Jewish people from America and Russia to Israel because they were being paid enormous incentives to move. And they built the temple and anointed a king. Would that persuade you that the prophecies were fulfilling themselves by divine will, or would you see that as a artificial human creation, an imposture?
See, I think I might. You mean as I feel or a Zionist?
Both.
I would say maybe a Zionist would. I think you're probably going to be split. I think some of them are going to be excited that there's Bible prophecy. I think some might. I think a lot of people might think, oh, well, okay, it's not done yet. It's still in the process. Because, you know, really once the Antichrist it would reveal themselves. And of course, it's important, too, that the Antichrist is supposed to, I think, be wounded. And I think that's actually one of the nations that's wounded and rising up. I'm not really sure, but there's supposed to be miracles that are demonstrated by the Antichrist to deceive people, things like that. So the actual end time, that last period, needs to have that. If that's not there, then that's not the really fulfillment of the end. It's just part of the process.
Now, would you view the anointment of the Jewish king as the second coming of Christ?
Oh, if they anoint their Messiah, then I would say most Christians are going to consider that the Antichrist. Yes.
And they will then battle against it.
Battle against it? No, I don't. I think they will. I think it would be a passive thing. One of the things you can be absolutely certain of, if there is something that is to be put on the forehead or the right hand to buy and sell, you can be sure that they will not accept it. That means death. There, if you accept the number of the beast, you are not in the book of life. Your name will be blotted out of the book of life. So from that point of view, yes, they would resist that. Be it Zionist or myself, I would never accept that myself.
How would you persuade Christians that it's not in their interest to go to war with Islam and that nothing can be holy which sheds blood for the sake of Jews unless it is directed by the Messiah?
I think it is not the role of a Christian to be used as a tool of God's judgment. You are to be what is known as the salt of the earth to preserve. So God allows judgment. The Christian is the vehicle in which God preserves. Therefore, we do not represent that manifestation of God that brings judgment, which I would say includes war, the creation of the satanic imitation of Zion, that's what I believe it is, because I believe Satan is an imitator. Satan wants to be God, so he imitates God. And he wants to be God of the Jews. And so I believe that the current state of Zion is essentially a satanic creation. And if you look at what happens to Israel in the prophecies, you can see that that God is not for many of these satanic, or any of these satanic Jews. I don't even know what to call them. You know, they say they're Jews, but they're a synagogue of Satan. But
is there a peaceful dismantling of all this that can come about that won't be so traumatic or so filled with the horrors of the apocalypse?
I think that I would say that, you know, even including myself, that I have an expectation of this kind of judgment that's coming, but again, nobody knows when, and I'm not going to anticipate evil. If I anticipate evil, I am part of the evil. And as a matter of fact, what I believe is if I were to dismantle the Zionist state, that a million years from now it might come back, and maybe that will be the time that it's fulfilled. And that would be fine by me. Maybe there's a role to play of its delay. The message that's clear is to do good. And the Zionist copy is not good. You cannot be in that role. That is not the Christian role. That is a judgment role of God. And you fight evil. And if that leads to one thing or another, that's fine. The role to play is that of exposing evil and saving innocent victims from this. How can a Christian be for this?
Well, how do you explain the support, among the Christians you know, do you see an actual support for these wars? Why are they not trying to stop it? Is it actual support for the war, or is it just a passive ignoring of the war?
I think it's ignorance. And you know what? I think they believe that what most of the powers behind Zion is essentially a dormant, that they're dormant Christians. Let's put it that way. That they're simply dormant, but they will be Christians. Whereas in fact, and that's how I viewed it. I thought, well, you know, they're almost Christians, because I thought they believed in Torah. All they need to do is realize Christ, and so they will not be dormant. But what I realize now, it's funny because I thought, you know, when Christ referred to Pharisees and scribes as being sons of the devil or synagogue of Satan, I thought it was more of just a general thing. But it's quite literal when you see the source of these banking families and what they actually believed, you know, that they are really Satanists. So I think that might change the point of view, that these are not dormant Christians. They are the absolute antithesis of it. Christ never condemned anyone else. He never spoke to anyone in the way that he spoke to the scribes and Pharisees, which are really, today, is manifested in what I would consider this international banking cartel.
When you say international banking cartel, and you correlate that to evil acts, do you believe that they are trying to fulfill Judaic prophecies, or that they are trying to fulfill the prophecy of the Antichrist and through acts of evil bring about acts of good?
I don't know. That would confuse me, because they do not view... I know they... From what I've read in the Talmud, you know, Christian books are to be burned. So I'm not sure if they would be following some of the Christian apocalyptic visions. There, you know, maybe there are other ones that are similar. But that would somewhat confuse me, that they would be trying. I think that they believe that God will allow them to rule. It's really hard for me to guess, because I really don't know, you know, what's in the mind of people like this. But
Are you aware that they have the mythology that there will be an army that will be evil that they will use to wipe out all their enemies, and then they will take over power from that evil army?
No, I'm not aware of that at all.
Maybe that's one of the things we need to inform Christians of, is that Jews have beliefs that go beyond the Torah.
Oh, yeah. I was ignorant of that, too. What I need to convince my fellow Christians is that the Talmud Jews are the antithesis of everything that's Christian. That was the enemy of Christ. I believe that the remnant that God will save, because he promised Abraham that his seed will go on forever and that they will be the priests of God. I believe that remnant is going to come from Torah Jews. But they are a minority, a vast minority. If you read, Isaiah was complaining that to God that I'm the only one, there's no one left, and they're trying to kill me. But God said to Isaiah, I have reserved a remnant of 7,000 who have not bowed their knee to Baal. So the vast majority of Talmud or following are the antithesis. They are not at all any kind of a dormant Christian at all.
So you see, from the Christian point of view, all this is not leading up to happy events. This is leading up to a conflict between Christians and Jews, in which Christians will be duty-bound to fight against Jews if these conflicts continue to be deliberately provoked.
I don't know. I think that would be... I don't even know... I think it would be all over the place. I think there would be all kinds of different reactions to a conflict between Christianity and Judaism. I can't even predict what might come of that.
But you don't especially see that happening. You don't think events are leading up in that direction.
Well,
It seems leading toward a conflict between Islam and Christianity.
Well, I can say this, the Bible does talk about how how Israel will be a kind of a lodestone. I don't know exactly what it is, but it will be, if you try to physically attack Israel, it will be very destructive for that nation that does. Even though Israel itself will suffer, it will generally make everyone miserable. No one wins. And so
we had that attitude in all wars, that no one wins.
I'm sorry?
I wish we could adopt that attitude in all the wars that we are provoking,
yeah,
that no one wins.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, all evidence has shown that I can't think of, any war that we've been in the last 100 years that has really directly benefited the United States. I can't. So again, the admonition from Christ was to be as gentle as doves. I don't think it could be any more clear. And what's funny is that there you can see a system in place which is designed to enslave us as we go to war.
How do you feel about the media? Are you supporting them by buying magazines or newspapers, Hollywood movies, or do you see them as part of the problem and are trying to cut off their supply of money?
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm sure that I do contribute to what the so-called mainstream media. I mean, I don't get newspapers, or I think I get some magazines.
But is that because you now see them as a problem, or is that just because you just weren't interested?
Actually, I think I get—I don't know—I get like a free. I have a free subscription for a year to Newsweek, so I end up getting Newsweek, and I'm not entirely. Other than that, I don't think I consume much.
But you see them as part of the problem?
But certainly Hollywood. I'm definitely exposed to that.
So you consider them part of this problem, then? Hollywood, at least.
Oh yeah. I mean, as a matter, I think I don't think I've seen an Oliver Stone movie, but I think that it is an engine of revisionist history, specifically to confuse the public, because there's enough of a gullible public that's going to view that as history.
Because, you see, here's another thing that people need to realize. Yes, remember I said the Rothschilds would have no effect on anybody if people just said, we don't want your money, we'll go get a job somewhere else. The same is true of the media. You know, if you think of all the things you said you didn't know until recently, part of the reason you didn't know it is because the media is not providing that type of information. And
right.
And everybody could immediately just drive them out of business just by refusing to buy their newspapers, their magazines, their TV shows.
Right.
Without a fight. See, it's another one. If the Rothschilds come to you and say, here's $1 million, we want you to do, you know, kill this person, bribe this person. If everybody just said no, there would be the end of it.
Yeah.
And if everybody went offered a newspaper, said, we're not buying it, that would be the end of them. Do you realize the solution is right there in front of you, and it doesn't require a gun. It doesn't require bravery. It requires turning away from the money and turning away from all that titillation and entertainment in the media. What do they give you in that media? Titillation, entertainment, hope, dreams. There's nothing there, really.
Distraction.
And all people have to say is no. And it's over.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you realize how simple that is?
Yeah, I know. I believe me, I've realized the futility of conflict. Their enemy, and they've said it themselves, their enemy is peace. And so it is by becoming passive that will take away their ability.
That's right. Turning away from the temptation to join their crimes, join their wars, you know, buying their little, their idiotic titillation publications, and that it's over.
Yeah.
But so they seem to be the ones stirring up the trouble. Like you say, if people are happy and peaceful, where are they?
Yeah.
And somehow, if this message could get out to people, that when they say to you, well, what can we do? We can't do anything. Well, they can do something.
Who would you say are the primary opinion makers in the churches? Is it the individual pastors or the heads of the churches or the church publications?
I would
just evolve as a culture evolves in general.
I think that the heads of the church are influential. They speak, and many of them are very gifted speakers. For instance, Bill Hybels, he is the head of the Willow Creek Church Association, and just very gifted speaker. I would say that people would take very seriously. I'm not sure with other denominations there may be different. I think maybe there's more independent, you know, skepticism. I think they're a little more. It depends on whether you're in a more of a traditional church, that which is more or less a tradition that's passed on, versus say an evangelical one. But evangelical ones are probably, I would say, going to be the most fruitful, because they are extremely active. They are tireless for whatever good purpose that they think they need to do.
And hasn't it always been the role of the Catholic Church to promote peace?
The Roman Catholic Church that promotes
peace. It may result in provoking, but
I guess I still don't understand.
The Pope. Shouldn't the Pope,
the Pope
come out stronger that these wars are against the Catholic faith?
Oh, if we could get the Pope, that would be enormous. If you consider the, especially a lot of people don't really understand, in many parts of the world, the power of, you have the Philippines, South and Central America, which is, there's certainly, a possibility. I don't know how much, the problem there is a lot of their belief is a traditional thing. I'm not sure if it's an activist do good thing. There's a lot of that where it's tradition is mixed with an actual belief. But I still have hope for the Catholic Church, even as what I guess some people would consider me a Protestant, but I have hope.
Now, what are your views on preterist Christianity?
Well, I don't know. I see even that has somewhat changed. The tribulation period, can apply. It definitely has similarities to what happened with Titus at 70 A.D. When you consider, the point of view, Christ was always talking to his fellow Israelites, not to Christians in general. So I entertain heavily that the tribulation has already happened. And I think I really need to pursue that because the idea of the Zionist state being a tribulation or the tribulation may not in fact be the correct interpretation. As a matter of fact, preterism is that view that the tribulation happened to the nation of Israel in 70 A.D. And you can see many of those prophecies that Christ had mentioned do match.
The destruction of the temple?
Yeah, the destruction of the temple.
The dispersal.
The abomination of their holy place. I haven't really researched enough, but I think somebody even sacrificed a pagan in the Holy of Holies, as an ultimate sacrifice. But it was certainly an ultimate humiliation and destruction. And they killed off the priesthood. So they're unable to, and because of what happened, they're unable to start the sacrificial system. And so it was a complete destruction. And it was a tribulation. And even Josephus has mentioned something about the apparitions in the sky that where there was some manifestation in the heavens that people had seen. So Josephus, even the historian, even mentions things like this, and this is brought up by preterists.
So the Christians don't necessarily have to look forward to the tribulation or passively allow it to occur. They can more joyously and more humanely welcome the Jews into a more peaceful world.
Yeah, I think it's a possibility. Even I'm trying to find for myself, because I do recognize that many of the tribulation events occurred. Even if you look at some of the contemporary writing, many of the Christians thought that there was tribulation being applied to them. But I one thing I keep in mind heavily is specifically Christ, when he said he was there, specifically was always talking to Israel. I think a lot of Christians assume that Christ was speaking directly to the Christian, which there were no Christians at that time, and certainly there were no Gentile Christians. Certainly not in any number. There was a few interactions with Gentiles, but the main, as a matter of fact, it was a debate A lot of the early Christians weren't even sure whether they should be teaching the Gentiles. And it was Paul that said, you know, that he had authority to teach the Gentiles. And all the apostles had agreed that that was true.
Now, speaking of Paul, what will happen to the Christians if they don't abide by the Christian doctrine and don't conduct themselves in a peaceful and loving way? Isn't it true that the covenant can then be broken off from the Christians and restored to the Jews?
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, he says that the natural branches, which were the Israelites, were broken off, and the wild olive branches were grafted in, being you. And he warned, he's like, that remember, the root supports you, and you do not support the root. How much more if you throw away your inheritance, how much more will God take that away, you being a wild olive branch?
So in other words, if God allowed it to happen to the Jews, who were the natural branch, so much more should the, I wouldn't say unnatural, but the grafted in branch have to worry and have to conduct themselves in a righteous manner.
Yes, Romans 11 spells that out precisely.
And so that Christians should be wary that they not fall into a trap, because there's no guarantee that Christians will forever be the favored people in the eyes of God.
That is, I don't know if it is a admonition for people entirely, but certainly there are many references to a temporary faith and not having any roots. Jesus talked about, the different seeds that, some fall on a certain soil, and they don't take root, and they are quickly blown away. I'm not sure whether there is something known as the Gentile period, the time of the Gentile.
That's what I was getting to in Luke. Do you think a great many Christians think that the age of the Gentiles is coming to an end? And do you think that there are subversive Jewish agents who are trying to lead Christians into that belief so that they will welcome their own demise?
I don't think... See, the time of the Gentiles would have to end with Christians being entirely with God, so that there would actually be no earthly Christian at that time.
So you view it as a transition and not as an abandonment?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So if it happens, we'll know it, and it will not be... It's not handing over the keys to the Jews.
No.
It's potentially the Jews and the Christians and everyone else entering into a spiritual awareness and uniting with God.
Yeah, if you look at, I don't think that in any kind of unearthly sense that there's any primacy towards Jews versus Christians. Christians are, as a matter of fact, there are, Paul says that the Christian, the Jew, everyone is the same, is the Greek. The Greek and the Jew are the same. So Gentiles and Jews are part of God. That they have a part with God. So there is no concept that earthly power is transferred to Jews.
I would refer people to Galatians chapter 3, verses 16 and 28 to 29 on that.
Yeah, there might be, I don't know if there would be some kind of agent that would try to, I don't think that's going to go very far at all.
Well, I think there are Christian churches that make much of the idea that the time of the Gentiles will end, and then it will restore itself to the Jews as being God's chosen.
Yeah, I mean, there is the elect that are from the 12 tribes of Israel, but they're supposed to be essentially it is not a domineering, you know, they're supposed to be servants. They're supposed to be the representatives, you know, the dispensation of God's grace, not some kind of empire where they rule. It would not be in the absence of God. I mean, everyone would recognize Christ as being there. It's like, oh, there's Christ. So if there are Jewish masters in Israel and you don't see any kind of Christ, especially a righteous Christ, it's bunk. It's the synagogue of Satan. It's the false Jew, if you will.